Hey there. Because you're listening to this podcast, we at Blue Wire want you to know this. One, we freaking love you. And two, we want to learn more about you. Help us make more content you'll love by filling out a survey you can find in the description of this podcast. You'll help us out a ton, and you'll have a chance to win a Blue Wire t-shirt, hoodie, or a pair of AirPods. We appreciate you, hope you're staying safe, and want you to enjoy this podcast.
Hello, Fangirl Nation. You are listening to Fangirl Sports Network's Get My Job on Blue Wire. I am your host, Tracy Sandler, and this week I'm joined by ESPN host and analyst Anita Marks. From Daily Wager to the Anita Marks Show on ESPN Radio, Anita is immersed in the world of sports. On today's episode, Anita talks about COVID-19 and the impact it has had and will continue to have on sports. She talks about her grandfather's influence on what she's doing today and her time as a quarterback in the Women's Professional League. She also talks about how opportunities for women in sports have changed and grown in recent years. She's incredible, and it was a lot of fun and very inspiring to talk with her. So with that, let's get to it. Anita, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to talk to you. You've done so many incredible things in your life, and you're continuing to do so many incredible things that I'm just really excited to dive right in. And I went back and forth on how I wanted to start, but I've decided to start with you as a 7-year-old working with your grandfather to help him make his football picks, because I love that image. And I remember me as a little girl, you know, with my dad and my grandfather, my brothers, and everybody in my life just cheering for sports and talking sports. So I would love to start there. How did that begin with you and your grandfather, and how did you realize it was a talent and a skill that you had?
Yeah. So, you know, I'll start off on a more personal level. Unfortunately, my parents divorced when I was very young. I was 2 years old. Also, my grandparents, when I was born, were only 44 years old. So my grandparents, my grandparents were very, very much like parents to me. And so I would spend a lot of time with my grandparents, and I would spend a lot of weekends with my grandparents. And so on Sundays, football Sundays, my grandfather would gamble. He would wager. And when I was around, and you know, I loved watching football with him, you know, it was in golf, growing up watching football and golf with him on Sundays. And you know, when I turned around 7, 8 years old, I started, you know, my grandfather would sit in front of the TV, and he had this huge, like yellow legal pad, you know, with a pen and, you know, won here, lost here. So eventually, you know, I'm like, Papa, what are you doing? What is that? What's going on? You know, I'm piqued my interest. What's going on? And we sat down, and, you know, he explained to me that he had money on the games, and you know, starting the game, the Dolphins start with 3 points because they're +3. And at the end of the game, you add 3, like, you know, he explained it extremely well to me. And then, you know, as I got older, he was explaining how, you know, he needed to win 2 or 3 games in order for that bet to win. And then he taught me about parlays. And then he started teaching me about teaser bets. And I got into it, and I got to know exactly what he was doing extremely well. And then it got to the point he said, listen, here, these are my picks. You know, you call my bookie, you put the picks in. So at like 8 years old now, I'm on the phone with his bookie, and now I'm putting, you know, and it was so cute. Before I made the call, you remember those? Remember those green visors that bankers used to wear? Remember, like, the visor was like kind of transparent, but it was green. So my grandfather, you know, he made it such a big deal that I was making the call. He would take out, you know, he had one of those green visors for me. He's like, all right, you got to make the call, but, you know, we got to put the visor. So he'd put that visor on, and I'd sit there, and I would call, and I would put in all his NFL picks. And so, you know, I miss him tremendously. He was such a great man, and we had so much fun on Sundays doing that. And obviously the state of where we are in professional sport and how large gambling is right now. And even, I think, even more so as more and more states start voting for the legalization of gambling. God bless him. God bless him that he got me started early. And you know, I have the verbiage. I know the lingo. I understand it. And it's one of those things where, you know, everything happens for a reason. So I truly believe that I got started early in anticipation that now at this point in time in my career, that mm-hmm. ESPN is launching their gambling site Chalk and of course Daily Wager, it's a perfect fit for me.
So let's talk a little bit about Daily Wager. So we'll fast forward to today and to when you started that with ESPN. Can you just talk a little bit about how that began and how did it take time for people to really accept that gambling was going to be a big part of sports, or were you just able kind of to jump right in and people got on board?
You know, it's a great question because, you know, I've been in sports talk radio for quite a while. And in fact, I started with Stu Gatz in Miami. Stu Gatz and I used to host a morning show on a Fox radio station in Miami, Florida. And, you know, we were all gambling then, right? But mm-hmm. we weren't allowed to talk about it, right? You weren't allowed to talk. And if you talked about it, if you even mentioned it on radio, you got your hand slapped. You know, oh, no, that's a no-no. You can't talk about gambling. You can't admit that you're gambling. Obviously, you know, there were some people in the media, bigger names, that did and could, okay. But for a long time, it was a no-no. And so mm-hmm. it's so phenomenal that it's come full circle now. Not only do I contribute as a host and an analyst when it comes to NFL and golf for Daily Wager, but I also host my own Week in Wager gambling show on radio here in New York on 98.7 ESPN. And so, you know, this past season is just like somebody pinched me. It's amazing to me where we are right now and how far we've come and the fact that now it's being embraced and it's such a big part of sport. I was around when fantasy football was just starting to take off. You know, mm-hmm. I started playing fantasy football in 1988. I was dating a guy in college, and one day he said, "Hey, I'm not going to be, you know, I'm not going to come over tonight. I've got a fantasy football draft." And I said, "What's a fantasy football draft?" This was back in 1988, and so sure enough, you know, I finagled my way into the draft. I ended up drafting his team, and I ended up overseeing his team that year. And still, there were a lot of people. I mean, that's when like the USA Today was you'd get your stats from the back page of the USA Today that was delivered on Monday. That's when you found out if you won your fantasy football matchup. And so I feel blessed that I saw that the development of fantasy football and then it go mainstream and how successful that has been. I feel like we're on the precipice of that again, but with gambling. And so mm-hmm. I just feel really blessed that I'm on this platform and I'm with ESPN and the boat is about to leave the dock and I'm on it. And it's just a great feeling. I feel really blessed.
So you mentioned obviously the Daily Wager, you have a radio show. Do you mind just breaking down for our listeners? One of the things we drive home on this podcast a lot is how important it is to have different skill sets and to seize opportunities. And so I would love if you can kind of just break down each of your shows and the things you do and what each of them covers. I think it would just be really helpful for our listeners so it can kind of help them be like, oh, okay. So in my career, these are my skill sets. How can I, you know, move them into a number of different areas?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up a big tomboy and played a number of sports, but I always excelled at football. So I grew up playing Pop Warner, Pee Wee football. And then when I went to college, I represented University of South Florida. That's where I went to school. I represented our women's flag football league. We went to the national championship 4 years in a row, which was held in New Orleans during New Year's Eve. It was phenomenal.
Incredible.
And then the Women's Professional Football League started, and I tried out for the Miami Fury team, and I made it, and I was quarterback. So I played women's professional football for 4 years, which definitely helped me get to where I am today, because I majored in communications, minored in broadcasting, and minored in theater. And I never really had aspirations to be in front of the camera or on radio. I really enjoyed producing a lot. I felt the ability to be more creative as a producer was what really drove me. So I was a TV producer, sports TV producer for 10 years before I got in front of the camera. And the reason I got in front of the camera was because I played women's professional football. And the reason I got on radio was because I played women's professional football. Just yesterday, Jim Kick passed away, former running back for the Miami Dolphins. And at that point in time, he was hosting early to mid 90s. He was hosting a Monday night pregame radio show leading into Monday Night Football. And so as a quarterback of the Miami Fury team, Jim had me on his show. And after he interviewed me about the women's team, he said, why don't you, obviously, you know, football, why don't you stick around? Why don't you stick around and you know, write out the show with us? Sure enough, I did. The next day I got a phone call and I got a job offer to be a part of a morning show. And that's when I met Stu Gotts, who we see, you know, every afternoon on ESPN radio and television. So that's how I got that opportunity. And then also majoring in as a producer and knowing football, playing football, eventually got me in front of the camera. And that was all she wrote. So I've worked for a variety of networks, both on radio and on television. And what's great about what I think is great is I look at myself as a utility player, because I can host anything. And at the same time, because of my football knowledge and also my golf knowledge, which I'm really excited, ESPN's now utilizing me as a golf analyst. Mm-hmm. I could put on that analyst hat. So what's really unique and special and it's finally being utilized at ESPN, because with Daily Wager, Doug Kazarian is our main host. But when Doug can't host, I fill in. I'm next woman up for Doug. But when Doug is hosting, they utilize me as an NFL and golf analyst. So it's really been fantastic, the opportunities that I've been giving, because I can wear both hats. So, and then here I live in the New Jersey, New York area. And I have my own radio show here on 98.7 ESPN Radio. Radio is my favorite platform, to be quite honest. You've got a 3-hour show. You produce it. You're on air. It's you. It's the callers. It's the communication. It's the back and forth. I really enjoy my radio shows immensely. So, it's been great that I'm utilized on so many platforms in a variety of ways.
You spoke earlier about how you feel like gambling is a little bit, correct me if I say this incorrectly, but that's kind of a funny sentence. Correct me if I say this incorrectly. you were saying that you kind of feel like gambling really is on the precipice in the way fantasy football was some time ago. What do you think has changed there? And what excites you about that?
What's changed is I think commissioners and leagues are finally understanding and accepting that gambling moves the needle and is what's captivating for a lot of fans when you're, especially if you're talking about two teams that really aren't great, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, for example, I'll use the Bills, although I'd really like the Bills in the AFC East this year, by the way. I think they win the AFC East this year. But, you know, let's say 2 years ago, you know, before Baker Mayfield, let's say the Bills were taking on the Cleveland Browns. Who's watching that game? Nobody. I'll tell you who's right. watching that game, though. I'll tell you, who's watching that game? Somebody who has the Bills plus 3.5. That's who's watching that game. So, you know, I think what has changed is that the powers that be that run the leagues understand that the fan base, you will have a larger fan base, you will have a larger viewing audience if you embrace gambling. Because now that once you embrace gambling, now every game matters. It's not about, oh, I can't miss you know, I can't miss the Saints against the Ravens, right? You're watching that game, whether you got money on that game or not. Right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, are you going to be tuning into, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a cellar dweller here. This coming season, are you tuning into Cincinnati? Are you tuning into Cincinnati against the Jets?
Yeah, there you go.
if you're outside of New York, no, possibly not, unless you've got money on it. And so I think that has been the biggest. Listen, I love Adam Silver. God bless him. I think he's one of the best commissioners. He was the first to really step up and really embrace it and accept it for the sport of the NBA. Roger Goodell's coming around, obviously. So I really think that's been the biggest difference, is sports leagues are now acknowledging, understanding, accepting, and embracing it. And more states are legalizing it. And God bless. God bless for that.
Well, that's true. And you make a really good point, because now all of a sudden those games that are like, oh, God, who is going to watch that Dolphins-Bengals game? All of a sudden, yeah, people are going to watch, because there's also probably a whole lot of bets in that game that are interesting and that you can have fun with. And now you have to watch that game, and it is good for the league, because otherwise, who's watching that game?
Exactly. Exactly.
I think that makes a lot of sense. So I have a question that you may or may not know the answer to. So how is that for an intro to your question?
Okay.
and it may be kind of impossible to tell at this point, but I would love to just get a little perspective from you. How do you think gambling and sports changes in the age of COVID-19? Let's assume everything does come back. The basketball season does start July 30th. Football season stays on track. And let's even pretend baseball somehow figures it out. But how do you think betting changes?
It's an excellent question. And I just got off the golf course. I played golf today with David Berman, who's one of our executives at Daily Wager. And him and I had this conversation for over an hour today. So I love that you're asking me this, because I said to David is our liaison between ESPN and Las Vegas. So he speaks with those who run the books quite frequently in Vegas. So he has the inside scoop. And I said to David, what happens if, so let me rewind. The savvy bettors, okay, the sharks, the savvy bettors, you jump on lines on Thursday or Friday. Okay. Because let's say, for example, who's your team? Who's your favorite team?
49ers.
Okay, so let's say the 49ers are taking on the Seattle Seahawks, and the 49ers are at home, okay? Mm-hmm. So that line might open up 49ers at home -3. Mm-hmm. Now, by Friday, that line might jump up to 3.5, maybe 4.5. You want to get it at 3. You don't, you know, obviously that's a better, that's, you know, there's more value for you there, right? Like, or, mm-hmm. you know, you can even, if it's a 3, then it's nothing for you to buy the half point down. Maybe you get it at 2.5. Well, the best lines you're going to get are on Thursday and Friday. Okay. Now let's, mm-hmm. let's fast forward to Sunday. Like, for example, what happened this past week with Nick Watney in the PGA Tour, right? Like, you didn't find out that Nick Watney was COVID-19 positive and wasn't going to tee up on Friday until Friday morning. So what mm-hmm. happens, if now you have put down your bet on Thursday, you got the 49ers at home -3 against the Seattle Seahawks, and then on 9 a.m. on Sunday morning, you get notified George Kittle has come down with COVID-19. He's out for the day. Whoa.
God forbid.
I'm just saying, this is a conversation that David and I had today. I said, David, there has to be some type of stipulation. There has to be some type of mm-hmm. out clause that if one of the, this is my suggestion. My suggestion is that if one of the starting 22 players on either team, so a total 44 players on either team comes down with COVID-19, you have the ability to 86 that bet. Without any penalty, you know, mm-hmm. that's what I, and you know, but then, you know, the argument, the opposite side was, well, wait a minute, Tom Brady could wake up on Sunday morning with a pulled hammy, you know, or right. George Kittle could wake up, because him and I have the conversation in regards to Tampa, George Kittle could wake up Sunday morning with a pulled hammy. it's the same thing. And I don't think so. Not in a pandemic world. I don't think so. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see how the sports books do handle a number of bets pertaining to players and players that make the difference in a game, right? Like your clutch players who are making plays to help team. You know, I'm not talking about the backup guy. I'm talking about your starters, like the Jimmy Garoppolos, like the George Kittles, right? Like the Russell Wilsons, where if they're not active, that bet is not attractive, right? And so there needs to be an out clause there. And only time will tell. We'll see what happens. But it's interesting. This is a conversation I had with a guy today on the golf course.
Well, and I think you're right. I think it is different in a pandemic world, because I was listening to a podcast about this. It may have been an ESPN podcast actually a couple weeks ago in relation to basketball. And the players go back, and let's say your star gets COVID, and that's the end of the season. And is that any different than if they got injured? Do people and fans look at it differently? I agree with you. I think it is different just because it is a pandemic and the way that it spreads. And it's just a different kind of thing. So I totally agree with you. That's an interesting perspective. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah. It's this whole, you know, not to mention, I mean, this whole pandemic, COVID-19, the whole thing is just, obviously has been horrific for all of us. Some worse than others, okay? Mm-hmm. But I also find it fascinating in regard to how different areas of our country are handling it. And I think it's going to be just as fascinating to see how our wide, wide world of sport. Like, I feel the PGA Tour failed us this week. You know, mm-hmm. Nick Watney wakes up Friday morning, doesn't feel good. He still goes to the club. Nick Watney gets a test in the morning. He has to wait about 3 hours for his test results. And while he's waiting, he goes to the driving range and he goes to the putting green to practice, to get ready for his round. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Like, what? Well, the opposite side of the coin there now is, well, what if Nick Watney came back negative? Now you're telling him that he can't participate in his 1 or 2 hour routine to get ready to tee off on Friday. You're going to quarantine him before his round because there's a chance that it could be positive. My answer to that is yes. I'm sorry. I think keeping everybody safe to me is more important than Nick Watney getting, you know what, move his tee time back, do something. But yeah. he got tested. Is that unbelievable? He got tested and then was able to go out and practice and get ready for his round, but then was told he's positive. So then he was removed from the tournament. Like, you know, I find it, you know, what's the NBA going to do in Orlando if that does happen? How is the NFL going to handle it? It's an onion, and there's so many layers to every league trying to have the best scenario in the safest scenario, but this is the first time everybody's doing it. So we're all learning and nobody has the right answers. Just the way that this is going to play out across the board is really going to be fascinating.
And Nick Watney is kind of a microcosm for the rest of us, because like you said, move back is tee time, because the risk reward is higher. So how many people did he come in contact with during that time period, even if it was two people and one of those people got it? And at that point, and that person came in contact with three people. And what, I mean, it's like, I have this discussion with my friends about, you know, going back to a class, like at the gym, because I love to work out and I've really gotten used to working out at home and it's been fine. But in terms of going back to a class at the gym, and I say to my friends, I'm not concerned about the gym. I think they're doing everything in their power to make sure everything is sanitized and clean and social distance. I'm not concerned about that at all. What I'm concerned about is the person who comes to class who says, I don't feel that good, but I feel like I need to work out today, or I need to sweat it out, so I'm going to go. That's the person that concerns me. And I think the example you just gave is kind of a microcosm for all of that.
So here's another one for you, right? Because I had Michael Collins, aka the Caddy, covers all things golf for ESPN and does a phenomenal job. I adore the man. I think he's fantastic. I had him on my radio show on Sunday, and him and I got into a discussion about it. And he said, listen, Nick Watney is a really great guy. And I said, Mike, I don't doubt that. But here's the difference. And tell me if you think I'm wrong. If I'm Nick Watney, and by the way, little tidbit of information, majority of golfers have something called a whoop band. Have you heard of this?
Is that the one that tells you if you have symptoms?
Well, what it does, it's a whoop band, and typically you use it at night, and you use it when you sleep, and it gives you like an update on your respiratory, like how your respiratory system is behaving.
Okay.
Well, apparently his whoop band notified him that his respiratory system was not A-okay, on top of the fact that he had COVID-19 symptoms in the morning. If that's me, I'm calling the tour and I'm saying, hey, listen, I think I might have this. So can you send somebody to my hotel room to test me? As opposed to me going to the club, even Brooks Koepka, apparently Brooks Koepka did an interview NBC. That's who aired it. And Brooks said, I was talking to him in the parking lot. So instead of going to the club and possibly infecting other people, I would have stayed in my hotel room and I would have asked the tour, can you please send somebody over here to test me? Because I'm worried. I don't want to be around other people. God forbid I get somebody else sick. I won't be able to live with myself. And here's another thing. A lot of caddies on tour, they're not young whippersnappers. There's some caddies on tour that are in their mid to late 50s. Some of them are in their early 60s, you know? So, mm-hmm. I don't want to rip Nick Watney. I'm sure he's a fantastic guy. And I hear this from a lot of people. I just would have done it differently. You know, I would not have gone to the club. So.
And that's why I think what's going to be hard is that's where it gets difficult with all of it and all of the leagues really making sure there are protocols in place, because I have no doubt he's a fantastic guy as well, but he probably figured, yeah, maybe I have symptoms, but I'm sure I don't have it. I don't feel that bad. And so I think it's easy for everybody to have that conversation with themselves, especially when there's so much on the line and no one's doing anything with ill intentions, but this is, I think, what's going to be really difficult. I want to talk more about this, but before we do, we're going to take a very quick break to hear from our sponsor. They say a healthy gut means a healthy you. Favor apple cider vinegar shots bottle this feeling into the convenience of a 2-ounce shot. Better digestion, stronger immune system, and the lowering of blood sugar levels are just some of the benefits to shooting a daily Favor shot. Their proprietary blends are raw and organic and mixed with other functional ingredients to create a better tasting experience. First-time shooters can go to drinkafavor.com. All right, so COVID-19, I think you brought up some really, really good points, Nita, and I'm glad you did. And I think it opens it up for a lot of discussion. And I also think, unfortunately, with the sports leagues, it's going to be a lot of trial and error. You know, we're going to see what happens, but maybe what did happen this weekend with the PGA Tour will be kind of a cautionary tale, for lack of a better term, for the rest of these sports and for athletes to say, oh, this, something feels off, and before I leave my hotel room, I should have this taken care of.
Yeah. I think here's the thing. And again, Michael Collins, you know, the back and forth him and I had was, well, Anita, you know, Nick Watney shot a 74 on Thursday. He could have come out and had a great Friday and made the cut. You're talking about a guy who potentially, you know, has an opportunity to make $1 million. And you're asking him to either stay in his hotel room or stay away from the course and not prepare for his round that potentially, you know, and not that Nick Watney is one of the best golfers on tour. He's not. But I understand where Michael Collins is coming from. He's like, this dude has an opportunity to make $1 million. And you don't know if his test results is going to come back. So what? So he's going to sacrifice not trying to make $1 million because he just doesn't know. He's 50-50 on whether or not this test is going to come back positive or not. So my response is, yes, I think this virus is that serious and that contagious that, yes, I do. But obviously, Nick Watney did not feel that way, and Michael Collins doesn't feel that way. And I get it. Like, I understand. I understand. It's just money. You know what? You know why is the NBA rushing to get the league started again? You know why? What the NHL? Because money, right? Money moves everything. It's all about the money. You know, owners across the leagues, all over sport, all the leagues have so much money, like the risk of losing so much money because of the TV deals if they don't get this started or going again. And I understand that. And obviously money was the driving force as to why, you know, this PGA Tour player went to the club, got tested and still went and practiced and was getting ready to go out there and play because he had an opportunity to make $1 million. I get it. It's just, you know, where are your priorities, you know, and how serious do you look at this virus? Because here's the thing, like we just heard Ezekiel Elliott, right? Reports were Ezekiel Elliott had it, but he wasn't in the hospital. He wasn't on a respirator. There was no like huge threat of him losing his life. And we really haven't heard that in regard to a star player. The majority of athletes that are getting it are asymptomatic. So is that another reason why we're kind of a little, you know, players and are more relaxed? Like our athletes are, you know, some of the most in shape human beings on the planet. So right. is there this philosophy? Is there this mindset like, hey, even if I get it, I'm going to be okay. I'm in great shape, you know, and is that true? Like, you know, is that the way that professional athletes should be approaching COVID-19. You and I could probably do an entire podcast on professional athletes and COVID-19. I tell you.
And we probably will be in one way or another over the next several months. We will be because we are going to see it's very much uncharted territory. And we will see, you know, what happens, what the repercussions are. Are they able to contain it? You know, what's going to happen? We obviously over the last several days saw a number of players in a number of different leagues test positive for it. And, you know, I think it'll be very interesting to see what happens. We just don't know. We've never had, at least not in my lifetime, but I don't think we have ever had a situation quite like this in the world of sports. And kind of going back to what we said earlier, to me, it is very different than injury. So, you know, we'll see. I have kind of along this line, have a question for you because we're talking about athletes and mindset. You're very athletic. Obviously you played football, you played golf. I know you've been doing a lot of hiking during this time. How hard was it for you in the beginning to kind of be stuck inside and not be able to do that? And how did you navigate that?
So probably in the past year and a half, I became a SoulCycle fanatic, and okay. I was taking at least anywhere between 4 to 5 SoulCycle classes a week. Sometimes I was doubling up, and I don't want this to become a SoulCycle advertisement. that's not, you know, you could find it at Peloton, you could find it at Prime Cycle, mm-hmm. wherever you spin. Okay, I'm just sharing with you my experience. I've always been athletic. I've always taken really good care of myself. I eat well. I work out. When I golf, I walk. I never ride in a cart. And I always felt that I was in really good shape until I started spinning. And mm-hmm. not that I needed to lose weight, but probably about 4 months into spinning, I lost 20 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
And I never looked better. I think spin is the magic pill. You know, I ran the New York Marathon. Like I'd run 5-7 miles. Then I'd come home, shower, and I'd go play golf, and I'd walk 18 holes. Right? I'd go to the gym. I'd work out. Like, But my body was never in as good shape as it was when the last nine, you know, the last year and a half that I've been going to spin class. So to answer your question, it was hard. I gained 10 pounds. I'm not someone to have a stationary bike in my house. I'm not. The class starts and I can't wait for it to end. I'm looking at my watch. My mind is going elsewhere. It's a totally different experience for me. So I could have purchased a Peloton bike. I could have purchased a SoulCycle bike, a Schwinn bike. I could have done that in my house. I didn't because I knew I wouldn't use it. It's not the same for me. So, so you're right. Each week I try to look back on my week and I try to think of what are the positives that I can take away from us being a pandemic and dealing with COVID-19. And one of the biggest positives for me is the fact that I have taken up hiking. So mm-hmm. every Sunday I find a new trail somewhere in the New York or New Jersey area. And I go on these hikes and they're anywhere between 10 to 12 miles. The elevation is unbelievable. I get up to like over 2000 feet.
Oh, wow.
And it's been amazing. It's just absolutely beautiful. I connect with nature, not something that, you know, I've never really did. I'm not someone to like, you know, you can't pay me to go camping. Like I'm not a camper. Right. I don't write like, give me a spa. I'll go play golf. We'll go to the spa. I want to stay in a hotel with air conditioning and fine wine. Like, you know, I'm not that person. Just to preface, I'm not that person. So this is kind of out of my comfort zone and not what I'm used to, but I have some of those beautiful trails are here in the New York. And here's another thing, the history, like yesterday I was hiking and I came across, you know, a boulder that had a plaque on it and something to do with Washington. This is what one of Washington's posts, you know, during the Revolution. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know if you've been to New York and you went to see Hamilton, you know, play Hamilton. So Hamilton was shot and killed about 10 miles from me. Like people don't realize Hamilton was shot and killed on the Jersey side.
Everything's legal in New Jersey. His gun
battle with Barr was here on the New Jersey side. So I'm hiking. There's a lot of history here that I'm uncovering, and I've really, really enjoyed it. And that's definitely probably one of the biggest positives that I can take away from dealing with this pandemic is my Sunday hikes. They're fantastic.
That's great. And I think everybody has had to find their thing. And it's funny because so for me, I definitely like SoulCycle. I ended up getting a Peloton in January because I travel so much for work. I think most everybody on this podcast knows I'm based in LA, but I cover the 49ers. So I'm traveling all the time. And even in the off season, which there really isn't an off season normally, not during pandemic times, but normally back and forth all the time. And I was like, I want to have a Peloton because it just, when I get off a plane, going to the gym, going to a class isn't always so easy, but jumping on the Peloton in my house. Okay. That I could totally do. And it saved me through the pandemic. So it's just so interesting to me how, you know, we all have our different things and different things that work for us. And then bringing that kind of back to this podcast, because I want to talk a little bit about your past and getting to where you are. And one of the things we talk about a lot is being on this podcast, especially is being your authentic self and not trying to be anyone else. And I don't mean to do a stretch between SoulCycle and the Peloton, but it just kind of drives home that point that we all have things that work for us and all have different, you know, ways that we deal with stress. And I just think that kind of goes to that idea of doing what's best for you and being you.
Absolutely.
And it might be a little bit of a stretch, but I felt it. So I wanted to voice it. And that's the beauty of having a podcast. I get to do that.
No. I mean, absolutely. Listen, I have a number of friends that, that love the Peloton and don't see the difference of, you know, doing a class, a live class at home, as opposed to in a room. I do. It's different for me. And, you know, not to say that I wouldn't do the home bike. It's just not for me. I'm not focused. I can't wait for the class to end. And I find that my mind wanders, as opposed to being in a live class with a lot of people and energy and music. And I love my instructor and, you know, everything that encompasses. It's an experience. It's a happening. You know what I mean? It's like, whoa. And you walk out of there and you've got all this energy and you're like, all right, this is how I'm starting my day. This is great. So.
And anyway. I just think it's really important for each of us to find that for ourselves. You know, I think it's really an important thing, especially during a pandemic, but just in life, to find that for ourselves in our personal lives. And again, also in our professional lives. And I think that just kind of, you know, I don't know. I just think that is important. Again, I'm really enjoying the word microcosm today, but I think each of these things kind of are even bigger than what we talk about, if that makes sense. And so I just think that's really is important. And we just want to drive that home to everybody, like find what works for you in life, whether it be personally or professionally. And it brings me to a question I have for you, Anita. So that was a very long-winded way of me to get there, but, a question that I ask everybody, and I would just be very interested to hear, especially because you've done so many different things in your career, which is incredible. What is a criticism you received early on that, while tough to take, it's kind of a two-parter, it shaped your future in a positive way? And then also, what is a criticism you received where you said, I take the criticism, I understand what you're saying, but this is who I am and I'm going to just keep going?
Great question. I get a lot, even from my mom, is, you know, why aren't you on the sideline? Why aren't you doing the sideline reporting? And with all due respect to Lisa and a number of sideline reporters, and who do a phenomenal job, it's not what I want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be in studio. I want to host. I feel that I know a lot about football. I feel that I know more about football than most men know about football, just because I'm a female and I have the ability and I was blessed that I had the opportunity to play women's professional football, which helped me immensely in regard to relating and understanding what happens in the course of a game, or, you know, when it's 4th and 12 and whatever. But I feel that for the longest time, women were allowed to play in this arena, but we were told what position we had to play. Mm-hmm. And that probably was and has been the biggest struggle and disappointment for me. You know, like, you know, why has it taken us so long to have a female do NFL play-by-play, or college football play-by-play, or NBA play-by-play, or as a color commentator? Like, why did it take us so long? And so early on when I started my career, you know, it was, oh, no way can a female host sports talk radio by herself. Okay, well, I proved them wrong. I've been hosting sports talk radio by myself now I started as a three-part team with Stu Gotts on a Fox station in 92. And then I started hosting my own sports talk radio show in 95. And here I am in New York, the number one, you know, city in the world when it comes to broadcasting. So I was able to jump that hurdle and do well. And now, like I said, you know, when we started earlier on in the podcast, I feel so blessed that I have the platform of ESPN. ESPN has embraced gambling. Again, I think for a big reason is because a lot of commissioners and leagues now have embraced gambling. And they're allowing me to wear a number of hats. And it's in studio hosting when Doug Kazarian is off. And they're utilizing me as an analyst when it comes to the NFL. I mean, let's be honest. There's not very many female NFL analysts in our business. And it's not to say that there aren't women out there that are really qualified. You know, like, one thing I love about Mina Kimes, like, the platform that ESPN has given for Mina Kimes has been sensational. She does her homework. You know, I watched Mina Kimes. I listened to her podcast. She writes about the NFL. She knows her stuff. So, mm-hmm. So to answer your question, the biggest obstacle in my career has been, hey, we want you to come play our game, but here are the few positions you're allowed to play. Now what I'm seeing is, all right, come play the game, and you want to play quarterback, you can. You want to be a running back, you can. Now, not only are we invited to play in the game, but now we can play whatever position we want, given that the network gives us the opportunity to do so. You know, it's not looked as though it's more about talent and ability and knowledge, and not just because I'm a female and a female can never host a show or be an analyst for football. Like, we're way beyond that. And thank God we are, right?
Thank God we are. I started doing this not that long ago. I started Fangirl just covering the Niners in 2015. So this is, you know, it's been 5 years, and I've seen it change even from that. You know, when I would be a guest on something and people would leave comments about the girl. The girl said this, the girl said that. And I feel like I do feel like even that's changing in a way, and that, you know, people are, it's the analyst. It's not the girl, the guest, the analyst, Tracy, Anita, Mina, not that girl with the blonde hair, you know, the girl with the brown hair, whatever people say. And I think we are making progress there. And I think a lot of that is because of, like, what you said with ESPN, they've given you a tremendous platform and you're able to pick the position you want to play. I'm glad you brought up Mina Kimes. She was a guest on this pod, big fan of hers. She knows her stuff. And also that brings back to a point that we like to talk about a lot on this podcast, preparation, preparation, preparation. You can never be overprepared. And one thing that probably won't change for a long time as women is we need to be even more prepared.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's another thing, and it is what it is, right? Like, and it's interesting because, you know, obviously I'm following, you know, Black Lives Matter and that movement and what's going on. And mm-hmm. a lot of times, you know, I'm hearing a lot of interviews and some of the stuff that African Americans have been faced with and the hurdles that they've had to go through, and is some things are very similar to what women have to go through, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, as an African American and as a woman, you know, you don't have the opportunity to be wrong quite often, right? Like, you are held to a different set of standards. God forbid I mispronounce TJ Houshmandzadeh. I'm not Chris Berman, who maybe had one too many last night. Wink, wink. I'm that girl who doesn't know. I'm that girl who doesn't know anything about football.
The girl.
Right?
Yep.
That's right. I'm that girl who doesn't. She doesn't even know how to pronounce his name properly. Get her off the air. But meanwhile, mm-hmm. some dude could mispronounce a few names, and, you know, well, he's having a bad day. He's just having a bad day. You know, for us women, it's, oh, she doesn't even know how to pronounce his name. Get her off. She's got to go. And you talk about over preparing. Well, yeah, tell me about it. You know, I host a 3-hour radio show on Saturday and Sundays. I can't even begin to tell you the amount of material I don't even get to. I don't mm-hmm. even touch. I over prepare for everything. Less is more. I get it. But at the same time, you can never prepare enough, especially as a female in this business, to make sure that you always have your T's crossed and your I's dotted. But this is something that I've just accepted. Like, you know, this is the sport, you know, this is the career that I chose. This is the arena that I'm in. And this is just how it is. And that's fine. You know, I have to play to a different set of rules and standards because I'm a female, but I chose this, eyes wide open, and it is what it is. So I'll roll with it. I'll just over-prepare. It's fine.
It's fine. I mean, in the beginning, when I would first start doing this and I would guest, I'd go on these shows and it would be like me and three guys, and they would all have their computers out and they'd be talking about something. They're like, let me look it up. and I would have a piece of paper with a few notes scribbled down, usually just a stat because I wanted to make sure I had the number precisely right. Mm-hmm. And people would say, oh, it's so funny. These guys have their computers and you have like one piece of paper that you rarely look at. I'm like, well, I have to, because if I'm up there with a computer, then the response is she doesn't know what she's talking about. She had to look it up. And that's just, you know, hopefully that will continue to change. I think it's gotten a lot better, but hopefully that will continue to change. But the best we can do is be prepared and know our stuff. And that's really what, you know, it changes everything. But that's interesting what you said about the 3-hour show and the amount of material you don't get to, because I agree, less is more in a lot of ways, but not when it comes to being prepared.
Yeah.
For a job interview, for an appearance, for whatever it may be, for your show, preparation, preparation, preparation. And I harp on it because one of the things with this podcast is I know we have a lot of listeners and women who want to work in sports. And so I always try to throw out those tidbits that are, you know, important for that. And that is certainly one of them.
Yeah. I can't stress it enough. You know, I will say this, you know, I've spoken to a number of women who, you know, are, when I tell them what I do, how do you do sports talk radio? You're on there by yourself. What if a caller calls in and asks you a question and you don't have the answer to it? Especially here in New York City. Let me tell you something. New York, and I know your LA sports fans are very savvy and very wise as well, I'm sure. I don't think there's a smarter, a more intelligent group of sports fan than up here in the Northeast. Like, and you can't BS them. You can't.
Mm-hmm.
So I always tell people there's nothing wrong with saying, you know what? I don't know, but this is what I'm going to do in the break. I'm going to do some research in the break and let me get back to you on it. Like I never BS anyone. I don't fake it. And it's okay. It's okay to say, I don't know. You know, you can't say it often, but it's okay to say, you know what? I don't know. And so to me, I know sports talk radio, you're on, you know, it's kind of like, I call it a magic carpet ride. The show starts at noon. I've got all this stuff planned out, but I might hit on a certain topic and pew, I mean that topic. And then that topic's flying for a good hour and a half. And then a lot of times a caller will call in and ask a question I don't have the answer to. And, you know, it's okay sometimes to say, you know, I don't know, I don't have an answer to that, but I'm going to do some research and I promise I'll have a response sometime soon, you know? So I just rather do that than pretend and then say something where you really don't know. And then you really look bad. So,
you know what? I agree with that. I'm really glad you said that, because I think we do live in this world, obviously, of the 24-hour news cycle and instant gratification and Twitter and all social media. And there's so much information flying, but it is so much better to say, I don't know, than to just make it up or to just guess and be so terribly wrong, because that's just so much worse, because nobody can know everything. That's just life. And so I don't think there's anything wrong in saying, you know what, I'm not sure, but let me find out and get back to you. You and I talked before this podcast, I think a little, that I'd lived in DC and I worked for the former mayor there. And I started in his press office, and he used to always say, if I ask you a question you don't know the answer, just tell me you don't know the answer. Don't say what you think it is, and then I go up in a press conference and say something wrong. And it's one of those things that you think is total common sense advice, but you'd be surprised at how many people don't subscribe to that theory. And so I'm just really glad that you said that, because it's okay not to know. That doesn't mean you didn't prepare. It just means you don't know everything, and that is okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Before we get to 5 fun facts, which is always my favorite part because it's fun, hence the name 5 fun facts. And you've touched on this, but I'd like to just send you, the first part of my question was, how have you seen opportunities change and grow for women in sports, which you've certainly covered. And if you'd like to cover further, please feel free to do so. But then the second part of that is, how can we still improve? And I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
Wow. How can we still improve? You know, our business is so subjective, right? It's kind of like, I try to explain to, you know, I have a friend who says, well, you know, why is she on all the time? Why aren't you on more? You know more. And I try to explain to my friends, our business a lot of times is like, you know, when your friend says, oh my God, I met this amazing guy and he's so gorgeous, I can't wait for you to meet him. And then you go out, you're at a bar, he meets you guys for a drink and you meet him and you're like, really? You think this guy's got, like, okay, better example. I have a huge crush on Ricky Fowler. Don't ask me. For some reason, I love me some Ricky Fowler. And when he's playing in a tournament and he's in it to win it on Sunday, I'm wearing orange. I have a scooter. My scooter's orange. I call it my Ricky Fowler scooter. My friends think I'm crazy, right? They're like, Anita, he's got a unibrow and he weighs like 100 pounds soaking wet. What are you thinking? I don't know. I just love Ricky Fowler. So that's my example in regard to our business. Executives have so much say, and in our business we call them our rabbis, right? Like, who's your rabbi? What network executive is your rabbi who hopefully loves you and is going to give you as much opportunity as possible to continue to be employed, right? Well, you know, our business is subject. Like, one executive might love me and the other one might not. You know, might not like the way my hair looks, might not like the fact that I talk with my hands a lot, might not like my inflection, might not like my wardrobe or my makeup, or, you know, a list of reasons. So, you know, I hope, and here, this is another thing that I love about ESPN, is ESPN really has created a phenomenal platform for women in our business. And some really great ones, you know? And so I love being associated. I love working for a company that does that. I hope there'll be more executives out there that will give more women more opportunity for a variety of jobs and not just, you know, hosting. Like, okay, so for example, like, you know, I watch... you know, I'm good friends with Molly Quirum, who, with, Stephen A. Smith's show. Like, okay. I've been watching this show for a while now and I've been watching Molly, and like, she's like, I'd say in the past year, 2 years, like she's having a bigger voice, you know, like when they're debating a topic, I'm sitting back going, Molly, get in there. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. finally she does, you know, like, I love that. I, you know, because we're seeing a lot of these entertainment sports shows where you have two guys that are going at it on debate shows, right? Typically, you know, right? Isn't that the formula? Two guys debating, and then we've got the one girl who's kind of, you know, the referee. She's bringing you in and out of break. You know, she's, all right, guys, time to move to a different topic. Time's up. No, I want her to have an opinion. She's part of the show. She should chime in. You've got two dudes, mix it up a little bit. So, you know, I hope that we continue to expand the opportunities and the multitude of hats that I think a lot of women could wear in this business, and not be that stereotypical, you know, well, you're a female, you have to be a nurse. You can't be a doctor. You can't be an anesthesiologist. So I like where we're going. I love the opportunities that ESPN has offered a number of us women at the network. God bless. And I just hope more networks and more shows do the same and broaden the spectrum of all the variety of hats that a lot of women could wear in this business.
Very well said. Very, very well said. Thank you. I knew that was a good question to ask you. I knew you were no good answer. That was really well said. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Well, I've had a lot of fun talking to you today, but before I let you go, we of course have to do 5 fun facts. So every week we ask everybody the same 5. And as I say every week, it's been really cool because it might be the same five questions, but we get five very different answers every time. So if you are ready, I'm just going to rattle them off for you.
I'm ready.
All right. What's your favorite moment in sports?
Oh, wow. Favorite moment in sports? Personally or as a fan watching?
It could be either one.
All right, I'm going to give you both. I'll make them really quick. Probably my favorite moment was Brett Favre playing on the night that his father passed away, and he came out, and he was otherworldly, and to play mm-hmm. with such a heavy heart and such a sad heart, and to play the caliber of football that he played, knowing that he was playing for his dad, I'll never forget that night, and I cried throughout that game. Because it was just, it was so spectacular to me. I'm not a big Green Bay Packers fan. I'm not a big Brett Favre fan either. I just, the way the sequence of events and all, how that all unfolded, and to see Brett Favre put on a performance like that, to me, was one for the ages. I'll never forget it. And personally, when I moved to New York, I worked for the New York Football Giants. I was part of their broadcast team. And I was blessed to be a part of the broadcast team. I did the pre and post game shows that aired on The Fan here in New York. And I was blessed that I was working for the Giants when they won the Super Bowl. They beat the Patriots in Indianapolis. And we came back and I got to be on one of the floats for the Canyon of Champions. And I was able to be on the float with the defensive linemen, Matthias Kiwanuka, Tuck, those guys, Justin mm-hmm. Tuck. And to go to be on that float and to see all the sports fans in New York City come out and line the streets of downtown New York, and I could not stop. It wasn't for me. I didn't win the Super Bowl, but I was so. It was such an emotional day. It was probably one of the best professional sports days of my career was being on that float through the streets of New York with all the Giants fans out there cheering for the Giants because they won the Super Bowl. I'll never forget it.
That's an incredible experience. That's really, really cool. Really cool. What is your life motto?
My life motto? Wow. Well, tell me yours.
Ooh, that's a very, very good question.
have you ever had anyone do that? Like throw it back to you?
Give me
an idea. Like what's your life motto?
I would say mine would be if I'm just like going, you know, like let's say we're doing five fun facts with me. Mine would be work hard, be kind, be fair. There you go. I probably could come up with something slightly, but I think that's an example. Some people have done like just do it. Some people have been like, you know, be your authentic self. But I would say mine really would be work hard, be kind, be fair.
Here's one. I talk to a lot of students. I'm asked to speak at a lot of colleges, and I always tell them, enjoy what you do. Enjoy what mm-hmm. you do. You will probably spend 75% of your time working. So if it's the majority of your life that you are working, make sure that you enjoy what you do. Don't settle. Don't settle for a job or a career that doesn't move you. And like, you know, I work really hard at what I do, but I love it so much that it doesn't feel like work to me. And mm-hmm. I think that's special. And I think when you achieve that, it's magical. So I guess my motto would be enjoy what you do.
That's a good one. That's a good motto. The next one we have is go to workout, even though I think I know the answer to it, but nonetheless.
Yeah, man. So here's my dilemma. Right? Like I'm not going into a restaurant I am not going into a spin class without a vaccine. Now, mm-hmm. now, very interesting. There is a spin. There is a spin studio that is hosting spin classes outside on a local football field here in Hoboken. Now,
interesting.
I'm doing those. I'm going to that like twice a week. It's not the same. It's not the same experience as I got at SoulCycle, but I'm still spinning. But I pray to God, not just for my spinning experience to come back, but I just pray to God for all of us that somebody somewhere finds a vaccine by the end of the year, and we can go back to some type of normalcy as soon as possible.
That would be fantastic. I think we're all on board with you on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a go-to coffee order or tea order?
Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding? So Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
And I get every morning. And in fact, like Uber Eats, they know like 6 a.m. I set my alarm. 6 a.m. I'm on Uber Eats. Grande iced latte, extra shot, 3 pumps of vanilla with soy. Boom.
And I tell people
all the time, listen, you remember that Snickers commercial? You're just not yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where somebody is like really surly and then they take a bite of the Snickers bar and then they're that's kind of me with my coffee. Like I am not myself until I have like that first sip of coffee in the morning. I am not myself. So
that's completely agree with that. I really do.
And it's funny because like you're either, there's no middle of the line. Like you're either a Dunkin' Donuts coffee drinker or you're a Starbucks, coffee drinker.
I have a Nespresso and ooh. I'm obsessed with it. And so my ritual of the morning is I do my Nespresso Lungo because you get the bigger pour with that. And then I throw in 2 scoops of Vital Proteins collagen powder and half and half, and then my day can begin. Until that happens, my day cannot begin. I mean, I would be late to my trainer or to work out because I had to have the coffee. Like, it's not like, oh, well, I better leave now. No, I need that coffee before I can go anywhere. So that is my thing. If I'm having like, I need a little afternoon and I want to like walk somewhere, there's a place not that far from me called Alfred, which I'll walk to get an iced almond milk latte. But my Nespresso with my collagen and half and half, that is my jam.
Love it.
I sometimes like when I go to bed, I like get excited to wake up so I can make my coffee. That's the situation.
Have you heard about Phil Mickelson's coffee that he's going to start selling? So Phil Mickelson, he's in the best shape of his life. And he claims that a big part of that is because of this coffee that he drinks in the morning. And it's like, it's coffee beans from Nigeria. It's a protein collagen protein powder. It's a concoction. And okay. he swears by it. And he's going to start selling it, by the way. So you should Google. You should look into it. It's this magnificent cup of coffee that not only tastes great, but will help you get into the best shape of your life.
You know what? Sold to the fangirl in Los Angeles who spends a lot of time in the Bay. Absolutely sold. I will be getting that coffee. I mean, I'm also a sucker for great advertising or anything. So he should actually have you on board here because sold. I'll be Googling and ordering. I'm going to probably be like on the pre-order list by the end of the day. And then our last but not least, and this is kind of maybe my favorite, a book every woman should read.
Oh, wow. How many people have said Lean In?
A few people have said Lean In, not as many as you would think, but a few people have, but that's okay. If that's the book, then that's the book. It's a great book.
So, you know what book I really thoroughly enjoyed was Many Lives, Many Masters. Have you read that one yet?
I have not.
So it's a book. It's a psychologist who works down at University of Miami in Miami. And he had a patient of his come in because she had anxiety to fly. And so in order to cure her anxiety, he uses hypnotism. And in hypnotizing her, he started to uncover all these past lives and that she's had and she's experienced. And he took notes, and then he would go back and he would research, and he would find out that, you know, these individuals existed, and the lives that she was talking about and the details that she would talk about while she was under hypnosis were true. And so it's a book about reincarnation and how you are reincarnated and you come back, you know, you come back to life and you live all these lives, and how souls travel together. And not to make this a religious thing, that's not what I'm trying to do. But what I find interesting is, you know, when you meet somebody and you say, God, I feel like I've known you for years. Like there's, you have this immediate connection with somebody. You meet them and you're like, there's something about this person. Like I'm a people person, right? Like there's something about this person. I feel that I have this connection to this person. Well, the idea and the concept and that he uncovered in the book is that souls travel together. So your mom in this life very well could have been your husband in a previous life, maybe two lives ago, and that souls travel together. And that's one of the biggest things that I took away from the book and I find interesting, because I feel that there are people that I come in contact with in life that I gel and I connect and I have these phenomenal relationships with. And sometimes I wonder, you know, did we know each other in a past life?
Oh, I love that. I absolutely love that. All right. Well, I'm going to be checking that out. So I will be reading that while I drink Phil Mickelson's coffee in the best shape of my life. So I'm very, very excited. You're going to see a picture of me on my Peloton drinking coffee, reading that book, and in the best shape of my life. And I
love it.
Thank you.
It's awesome.
Thank you very much. Anita, this was really fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me today. This was just great.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And if you guys like what you heard, which I know you did, please remember to leave us a review on iTunes. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram @FangirlSportsNetwork. Talk to everybody next week. Bye, y'all.